Welcome to Hopetown, Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Today, our topic is marijuana. We're not here to argue or debate about whether marijuana should be legal in Alaska. We could have done that about a year ago, but now the decision has been made. The voters have said, yes, we are legalizing recreational use of marijuana in Alaska. But we still haven't quite figured out what that means. Does it mean that you're going to have a corner marijuana store like there's a corner liquor store? Does it mean that a marijuana dispensary could open right next to your house? How are you going to keep your kids from using marijuana if that's a concern for you? Or if you're interested in using it, how are you going to get it? How much is it going to cost? What are the taxes going to be? So many questions. It's a really complex topic. And we're going to try to sort through as much of that as we can on today's hour on Hometown Alaska with three real expert guests and with your questions, hoping that you will call in with concerns and issues that you'd like to hear us talk about and that we need to deal with in this community conversation. So my guest today from Potluck Events, which is a business which is already gotten started and will presumably be growing as this legalization thing happens, Teresa Collins. Thanks for being with us, Teresa.
And thanks for having me.
The police, of course, will have a huge role in how this is regulated. And so we have Lieutenant Sean Case, who is APD's day shift commander and is sort of an expert on this area. Thanks for being with us, Lieutenant Case.
Thanks for having me.
And Ernie Hall, a member of the Anchorage Assembly, represents the west side of town, and he's chair of the Marijuana Committee. The Assembly, of course, is putting a lot of work into figuring out how this is going to work from a regulatory and legal standpoint. Thanks for being with us, Ernie.
Thank you. And thanks for doing the show.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of interest on this topic, and we're going to be open for questions for anyone who does have them. The number here is 550-8433. That's if you're in the bowl, 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 888-353-5752, and you can reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Assemblyman Hall, I thought maybe we'd start with you to kind of get an overview of where we are with this thing. It's been so complicated, and it's maybe a little hard to follow. The legislature took it up, and they passed one law, I guess, that set up a board to oversee marijuana, but they didn't pass sort of the main law that's needed. And so we're still a little bit in the dark, aren't we?
We are very much in the dark in regards to the state. The really good news was, though, Charles, is they did get the legislation passed to form a marijuana control board. And the other thing that's happening now that's very positive for us is the alcohol control board and the interim is actually going ahead and addressing regulation. Thrilled to death that Cynthia Franklin is over as executive director of that operation. Very, very bright lady. I think she'll do a remarkable job in regards to helping get the regulations drafted. And the reason it's so important that those regulations get written is just like alcohol, we need to have all of this at a state level so we all understand what the ground rules are. Then each individual community has the ability to make their regulations more stringent than what the state does, just like we do with alcohol. In the meantime, though, we've anxiously watched the legislature during the session, hoping that, number one, it's important that they go in and clean up the state statutes, because then in the municipality, I've already directed our legal department to begin to do that. And it's just absolutely required where in the past, marijuana has been a controlled substance. It's no longer that way now. It's legal to have it. So there's a fair amount of work just in going through and making sure that you've addressed
changing your laws so they match up.
Changing your laws so they match up. Legal department is pursuing that. Our permitting department, planning and zoning, we've developed a plan with them, and our intention is to have it to where, with all the public hearings and everything that we got to do during this process, because we've got to build all of that in. So we went out and established a date of December 24th. We need to be done with municipal code, with zoning. We need to be at that point ready for when license begin to be issued. So we built the calendar back from that date to allow for all of the public hearings, have worked with the chairman to understand that we will possibly have two or maybe even three special assembly meetings to be able to take public testimony as these.
This will be huge because you're going to be talking about where can they be located? What is the zoning? What is the, how far can they be from churches or from schools and
correct.
All of these issues? Everybody's going to have an opinion on that.
Exactly. And the good news on that one is it would appear that we're going to base it just like alcohol. So there's already specificity in law about how far from a church, how far from a school. So we'll just fall into those compliances. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody's going to have a lot of problem with that. The other thing that we're trying to resolve that we don't have any conclusion drawn on this yet is the land use, how we're going to address that. When alcohol first started, they were land use permits that were just issued by the Planning and Zoning Department. Assembly really had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we started having issues at some point with what would be called, I guess, bad providers,
mm-hmm.
The Assembly inserted and started doing conditional use permits.
Which means it's a land use permit where you have to have approval all the way up to the assembly level in order
correct.
To get your land use. And they can turn it down if they want to for basically any reason.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that is the only control that we have over liquor license is mm-hmm. our land use, our conditional use. Because even if an individual has a liquor license and the body decides to pull a conditional use permit, they can't use that facility.
Right.
Now, the complicated part about this is alcohol's been going for a long time, and we've got, there's probably over 1,000 liquor licenses in Anchorage alone.
Right.
So come May of next year, 2016, if the state gets their job done, they get the regulations written, and through those regulations, they determine how individuals are going to qualify for a license and how many licenses they're going to issue, whether they're going to base that on population. They've got a lot of work left to do there. So once they get that decision made, people are eligible to apply for license in February 24, 2016, which means they've got 90 days to process that, which could possibly mean, depending on how they handle the processing at the state level, you know, we may have 500 or 600 licenses show up in Anchorage in May that says, we're ready to open for business.
Wow.
And so you think about...
Makes you realize how big this is, that you've got 7 months to figure out your legal structure, and a year from now, they're going to be in business, potentially a lot.
Yeah. Potentially a lot of people mm-hmm. all at once. So
yeah.
Even when we renew alcohol liquor license, they're on a rotating basis.
Mm-hmm.
So we do, you know, a third, because the numbers are so
yeah.
huge that it's hard to deal with. So that's all a part of what we are working with. And we're moving full speed ahead mm-hmm. because the initiative that passed says if the state fails to meet their obligation and be prepared for licensing on February 24th, that defaults to local government.
Wow. So that's a lot to do. But I want to move on to talk to some of our other guests, because I want to get a sense of what the industry really wants to do. And so you've just heard from Ernie Hall, who chairs the Marijuana Committee on the Anchorage Assembly, words I never thought I would be saying, but there you go. talked to Teresa Collins, who's actually is already... sort of gotten started, and so your business is called Potluck Events, Teresa. Tell us what it is. You're not selling marijuana at this point.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Right.
We're a private club that people can actually bring their own cannabis products into the club and share and consume with each other. So,
okay.
And that's pretty much the gist of it.
Are you sort of getting in on the ground floor because you'd like to be part of a new industry, or how did you get into this?
Well, I saw a real need for there to be a safe place for people to consume cannabis products. And initially we wanted to open a lounge where people can bring their own, no selling, no buying, anything like that. And so then, of course, the public use was banned. So we had to turn it into a private club.
Oh, I see. So just give us a sense of what it's like there. I know you had an event last night for Cinco de Mayo.
What's
it all about? Paint a picture for me.
So last night we had a free taco bar. We had a pinata. We had a chili pepper eating contest. So it's really fun. People come out and meet new people that are planning on going into the industry or people that have just really wanted to have a place like this to go to. We have one member, she's 69, and you know, she tells me, I've been waiting for 50 years for this, Teresa. Thank you. You know, so It's really humbling to see how many people are so appreciative. We already have over 430 members, and our first event was March 21st.
Wow.
So that just shows the need for us to have these type of clubs and lounges in Anchorage, a safe place where people can go and consume and not be out in the public, you know, if somebody sharing the smell with other people or whatnot, you know. So it's just, I think it's a real need.
So, and you have a website, which is linked on our website at alaskapublic.org. I noticed you have to click and say you're over 21.
Absolutely.
Do you want to become a dispensary at some point when it becomes legal? Is that part of your goal to sort of to go forward in terms of more of a business and more of a, you know, being basically a bar for marijuana, right? That's what you would be.
If they allow those type of licenses, absolutely we would apply. Mm-hmm. Our business model is set up, though, to move on whether we get a license or not. We plan on staying in business. We're in a 3-year lease. So, you know, we plan on continuing to have events, and whether it's people have to bring their own or eventually we are allowed to sell them products, we're going to move on.
Uh-huh. Charles, just for my own edification, tell me what your business model is. Is there a cover charge? You've got to be generating revenue someplace. You can't sell and you're doing free tacos. So,
We do have a monthly membership fee.
Okay.
We also have a yearly membership fee. If somebody wants to save a little bit, it's $20 a month or $200 for the year. And then each event does have a cover charge depending on entertainment, depending on if there's food. We have DJs. We have our promoter's license. So we're planning on having bands, comedians, and different artists that as well.
I think if you had it sold Cheetos by the handful, you'd make money that way.
We sell chips and soda. Every drink you can think of.
Interesting.
Without alcohol.
Right. Mm-hmm. And where are you located?
We're at 420 West 3rd in downtown Anchorage.
So right downtown. So how did you get the idea to do this? I mean, where did it come from? Did you sort of see, wow, it's going to be legal? This is something I could make a new career at, or?
Well, I'm very passionate about the medical side. So when I saw that it was going on the ballot measure, I was very excited to see where it would go, to see the industry progress in Alaska. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to get into the business. I was the regional sales manager for a company for 10 years, a satellite company. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't sure if I wanted to leave that, you know, and start something new. And I had planned on starting a party planning company on the side. So then it just kind of all fell into place. Where it just worked out. I love throwing parties and events, and it just all worked out the way it was supposed to.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about the new marijuana industry, which is coming to Alaska. It's coming to Anchorage especially. And that was Teresa Collins, Potluck Events, and Ernie Hall from the Anchorage Assemblies with me. And if you want to get on the show and ask questions about this new industry, this new way of doing things we have in Anchorage, the number here is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So there's obviously going to be a big regulatory and enforcement challenge here. Alcohol. You know, when we had the campaign voting on this, a lot of people were saying, well, it'll be just like alcohol. And I kind of think, wow, alcohol causes a lot of problems in our state. You know, most of the folks who are in jail are there because of alcohol. And a huge effort is required dealing with alcohol for the police department. I expect there'll be quite a bit of effort dealing with marijuana, too, depending on how the regulation is set up and how everything rolls out. So Lieutenant Sean Case is with us from APD. He's been studying this. Lieutenant Case, first, thanks for being with us. What are the main issues that you see from the police department perspective that you're monitoring or that you're concerned about, that you see that what you're going to have to be dealing with as this moves forward?
Well, I think the first major issue that we have is we're in kind of in a situation of flux right now. None of us really know what's legal, what's going to be legal, how it's going to be regulated, how many grows, how many distribution centers are going to be allowed in Anchorage. And so once we get that system set up and in place, the police department can start figuring out what our role is in the process. But until then, we're kind of, much like the public is, we don't really know the groundwork or the framework that we have to operate in.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there are some folks who sound like they're jumping the gun in terms of starting businesses. And did you guys bust somebody who's running a sort of openly running a marijuana business and without the legal framework in place? I thought I saw something about that in the newspaper.
There was something in the newspaper about that, correct? And I think the concern that we have currently is if you open a business and you're selling product, which is against the law currently, then that's a criminal act. And so enforcement action will be taken on that.
Mm-hmm. So right now it's legal because the initiative went into place to possess it or not? I mean, what's legal right now?
So let me back up a little bit because a lot of people don't kind of understand where we were before mm-hmm. February of
right.
this year. So marijuana was kind of interesting because we have a limited right to possess marijuana prior to it becoming what we think now is legal for your own personal use. So you really weren't supposed to transport it, grow it, sell it, but you could have what we call personal use prior to the 24th. So that was kind of already established through a case in Alaska. So on the 24th, what became legal was to possess 1 ounce and or 6 plants in your residence. You can possess 1 ounce in public as long as it's in your pocket. You can have an ounce of marijuana on you. It also became legal to...
So previously, you could theoretically own it in your own home, but you couldn't take it from one place to another. So how did you get it?
Yeah, so you couldn't transport it, you couldn't grow it, but somehow if it just appeared on your nightstand,
right.
That's okay.
Yeah.
So what happened on the 24th is now you're able to grow those 6 plants,
mm-hmm.
And you're allowed to give up to an ounce or gift up to an ounce to somebody else.
Okay.
And that's kind of where we're at right now. So selling it, furnishing it to minors, those are still considered illegal. Possessing more than an ounce is still considered a criminal act.
And so next year, when all these regulations and laws that Assemblyman Hall is talking about are in place, then if you have a license or whatever the regime is, you'll be able to sell it. You'll be able to sort of drive up to someplace, sell it, and drive away with it.
Correct. So what the initiative actually allowed for is not legalization is actually probably not the best word. The commercialization of marijuana is really what the initiative mm-hmm. is calling for. And so that's where we're at right now is forming that framework to what the commercialization will look like in the future. So yes, the initiative will allow to have legalized grows. They will allow to have legalized commercial businesses or distribution points, so storefronts, if you will. The initiative also calls for testing facilities. So that if you have, whether you have consumables or even if it's just you're selling the marijuana bud for ingestion, those products will be tested so that when the consumer comes in and purchases them, they'll know what the THC content is, and it actually could be regulated that we want more stuff tested, like maybe mold, maybe we want that to be part of the, but that's all stuff to be determined in the future.
Right, boy, so many questions. We do have a caller, and I'd like to answer his question, and then I have many more of my own. Lauren, did you have a question?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
I had two. After losing 2 feet of my colon to arthritis medicine, I had 2 doctors tell me to take marijuana, but I don't want to smoke it, and I don't want to have to grow my own. Will it be legal to get the oil, not the THC oil as much as the CBD oil? And if I can't get it in Alaska, can I get it from another state that has it legally, like Colorado?
So this interstate issue, maybe I'll turn to Lieutenant Case for that, and then maybe Teresa Collins has an answer on it too. You want to jump in on that one?
Sure. So the out-of-state question is obviously that's the easiest one to ask because, you know, flying it, putting it into, you know, transporting it from state to state, that's, you're going to run into federal issues with that. So that's probably going to be a no on that question. What forms you can get it in Anchorage in the future, that's yet to be determined. But presumably there are going to be forms to get THC in forms other than a smokable.
Right. One would think so. Okay, Lauren, did you have another one quickly?
Well, if they're going to allow people to produce for oil, everybody's so afraid about explosions. Why don't they regulate it to where it has to be a certified lab to make it?
Well, this brings us, and thanks for the question, Lauren, and we'll go to our guest now. This is kind of brings me to a question I had, which is, selling it is one part of an industry, but you also has to be produced somewhere, right? And I'm wondering how that's going to work. I don't know. Do you want to take that, Ernie, and then we'll come over to Teresa?
Sure. Well, unless the community opts out, it is legal to, starting in February with the commercialization. Edibles, concentrates, I think that's more what she's referring to than just an oil. They take the oil and turn it into a concentrate. And the potency of the concentrates are typically in excess of 90%. So it's a very high potency in the concentrates and the edibles as well. But that's going to be part of what we deal with in regards to zoning. And the direction that we're heading at this point in time is growing, processing is all going to be in an industrial area because people really don't want it in residential settings because of the odor from the plant, as well as the danger, the public safety issue of actually processing and turning it into concentrates, because it's hazardous even under the best of conditions. And we've already passed a municipal code in Anchorage that makes it against the law to do concentrates in residential areas. So individuals making concentrate is against the law now.
Okay.
Commercial concentration, unless for some reason the community decides to opt out. And I think the general consensus on the body, and I'm not speaking for the entire body now, but I'm just telling you what I'm hearing, is if this community opts out of anything, it would be a public vote. The assembly would put it on a ballot and say, okay, do you want to opt out of edibles or concentrates? And don't anybody misunderstand me. I'm not saying we're doing that. I'm just saying that if it became an issue where the public started to have concerns and wanted to address it, other than it happening where an assembly member introduced an ordinance that said the community were going to opt out immediately, very quickly after it had passed, you won't see that happen again. What it would end up being would be on a ballot at a regular election.
That was tried and it didn't go over too well.
It was tried and it didn't go off too over too well. And you know, honestly, it was inappropriate. You had a vote of the people, and I agree very heartily with what Sean said. I think a lot of people that voted had no idea that they were voting in the commercialization of marijuana. The majority of them thought they were going to make it legal. They were particularly concerned about teenagers and others to get picked up smoking marijuana and they end up with a criminal record, and felt that, you know, that was harsh.
Well, they should have read the initiative before they voted on it then. I mean, that's... Because there were certainly out there people talking about it.
They really should have. And it was... I forget, 7 or 9 pages.
Yeah.
What they didn't understand is when they passed that initiative, they passed that number of pages of state statute.
We're creating an industry. Well, and before we go any farther, I want to clarify what a concentrate is. Mm-hmm. Teresa, do you want to take that?
I just wanted to answer.
I just want to know what it is, just for the purpose of the listeners, because I don't know what it is.
They take and heat it up, and they get oil out of it, and then they turn the oil into a concentrate that,
which then you could put in
would
food
look
or
like.
Something?
I guess the way I describe it, and looking at it, it kind of looks like a taffy or a caramel. It becomes a solid
It depends on the processing.
Yeah.
And it's really an extract. They extract certain parts, the THC, from the plant. But what she was referring to is CBDs, which CBDs are actually federally legal.
Okay.
You can actually buy CBD pills through the mail, have them ordered to you for medicinal use.
So it's not the part that's going to get you high.
It's not the THC. Yeah. So it's the cannabinoids, which is the one of the major medicinal properties of marijuana. So that is available to you. You can look online. You can order those online. It is federally legal. And it's really important for people that need that medically to have those options.
So what is the concentrate used for then?
It depends on, so the concentrate on the THC side, it's used for edibles, it's used for pills. There's a form of smoking called dabs that people smoke the concentrates. That's really for... I think that people that have a lot more serious medical conditions that really need a super duper painkiller.
Okay.
The people that I've met along the lines, that's how they've end up getting into concentrates, is because the flower form is not giving them enough pain management.
So now as we go into an industry and say, Teresa, if you have a dispensary, which is maybe like a nightclub type dispensary, whatever it is, obviously you're going to need a lot of marijuana, and it's somebody's going to be having to be producing it on an industrial scale. Are there folks out there talking about that or getting ready to start that kind of business? Because it seems like it would take a while. I mean, you need a really large facility. You need a lot of equipment. You need staff. And then the plants will have to grow, and you need sort of them to be growing continuously to be able to produce commercial quantities. Are big investors getting ready to do this?
Yeah. And I mean, that's a huge concern, is that people don't want to invest these hundreds of thousands of dollars and then go, oh, no, you can't have a license.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's kind of at a halt until the regulations are put in place and until we can see licenses start to be issued.
And, you know, and I like to underline that at this point, what Teresa said is crucial. Until you get a license and until you get a land use permit, don't spend any money.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go out there anticipating that you're going to get a jump, so you start buy a property and you start building a building in order to intend to do a grow operation, and then you find out that you don't get a license or you don't get a land use, you've got to have both pieces to do this. You've got to have the license and you got to have a land use permit.
But do you anticipate, I mean, obviously there are people out there growing it now, illegally, large grow operations, and they would be presumably the first people to apply for a license. Is there going to be a process where there's some way of saying, well, gosh, you were breaking the law before, we're not going to give you a license? Or have you thought about that?
We've spent a lot of time thinking about that. I don't know that we got those kind of grow operations in Anchorage. I'm sure there's some pretty good size operations in other places. But in Anchorage, I would say anything that you see that's going to be happening here is going to be in commercial buildings. It's 10, 15, or 20,000 square feet of space. I mean,
it's
going to be
money.
A huge investment.
Yeah, I'll probably do it in the valley
to be
or
able
somewhere,
there
yeah.
and go it. You know, we've had assembly members sort of going, wow, you know, this is kind of strange. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Where's the marijuana going to come from when all of a sudden you start having retail sales when you haven't been able to have a grow operation prior to this? And that is just the issues of a startup industry.
Right.
I mean, I don't know any way to answer that question.
But let me turn to Lieutenant Case. Obviously, there's a lot of people using marijuana now, and they're not all growing it themselves. Do you, from the point of view of APD, have a sense of where the marijuana is being grown that's coming into Anchorage now?
We have a lot of marijuana that's grown in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's make no mistake about that.
On commercial
quantities. And have been for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know that we produce marijuana bud, the flower of the marijuana, that's well in excess of 30% THC. Now, that's high quality marijuana that we're producing in people's spare bedrooms, crawl spaces, garages, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this community has been growing marijuana in reasonably large quantities.
How much resource does APD put into busting those grow operations, and how do you like look for them, and do you have like oh, if it's small, you don't really worry about it, or you look for bigger ones? Or how did that fit into your priorities and resource use?
Well, in 2014, the Anchorage Police Department arrested where marijuana was a primary charge, 107 charges in the entire 2014. And that's juveniles and adults the same. So think about, you got, you know, 9 months out of the year where you have school where a juvenile brings marijuana on school grounds, and that's included in those statistics where a principal or teacher finds it, and then the police department gets involved in that too. So 107 in 2014, that's not a lot of arrests for primary charge for marijuana.
Right.
You compare that to driving under the influence of alcohol, and that number pales in comparison. So it's difficult to put a lot of resources in something that's growing in someone's third bedroom. The other thing is that we do have this kind of personal consumption prior to the 24th. That becomes a little bit of an issue as well, where the police department, the municipality, the DA's office don't want to commit an excess amount of resources for something that we have a state Supreme Court that says for personal consumption, it's allowed. So we don't have, you know, a task force out there that's been operating the last 10 years as their primary function of busting marijuana grows. We just haven't done that.
Interesting. So much more to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break here. We're halfway through the show. When we come back from the break, I'll be giving out those phone numbers again, and email address for listeners who want to learn more about the new marijuana industry, which is coming. We'll have another half hour to talk about this topic with our three guests, Lieutenant Sean Case from APD, Ernie Hall, member of the Anchorage Assembly, and Teresa Collins from Potluck Events. Stay with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today our topic is marijuana and the new marijuana industry, which is coming to Alaska. It's been legalized, and we've already got businesses where you can smoke it, and soon we'll have businesses where you can buy it and grow it. And there's so many. It's such a complicated issue. It's extraordinary as you dig into it, and it's going to change our way of life here in Anchorage and in some ways that are maybe unexpected, and maybe a lot of people are really happy about that, and others may be nervous. We'd like to hear your thoughts on it. If you'd like to join us today with questions or comments, the phone number here in the studio is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 888-353-5752, and you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. My three guests are Ernie Hall, who's a member of the Anchorage Assembly, Teresa Collins, the owner of the Potluck Events business, and Lieutenant Sean Case of APD. And Lieutenant Case, I wanted to start with a question about driving. If you're driving, I think everybody in our society knows that if you're driving while intoxicated and get pulled over and you blow into a machine, and if it gives a number that is too high, you are going to jail. How is this going to work? I mean, people are already out there driving while they're under the influence of marijuana. Presumably, that will be a more frequent occurrence if it's legal. Maybe that's a false presumption. I don't know. How will you handle that? How will you know if the person is over the line or not over the line? Is there technology to do that, or what's the process going to be?
So in Alaska, our statute's called operating under the influence, and the reason why we changed to that some years ago, and we changed to that because that encompasses drugs and or alcohol. So that's our state and municipal statute, the way it stands right now. So we have been arresting and prosecuting people for driving under the influence of marijuana for decades already. Mm-hmm. So the process is already in place. It already exists. And the officer who conducts the traffic stop and has contact with the driver is trained to recognize impairment, and the decision to arrest is actually based on the impairment. So when we arrest someone for driving under the influence of alcohol, for instance, we're arresting them for being too impaired to safely operate the motor vehicle upon the roadway. Same thing goes with marijuana. It's really irrelevant at that point in time what the substance is. It can be a legal prescription that they're authorized to even use. But if they're too impaired to operate, then they shouldn't be driving because of the risk to public safety. Mm-hmm. So we arrest them for being too impaired. The standard test that we do is the breath test. And so when we have an individual provide a breath sample and it comes back with no alcohol on their breath, then we start a search warrant process to obtain a blood sample. And we've done this in the past numerous times. We've successfully prosecuted people for driving under the influence of marijuana, prescription drugs, and other illegal drugs as well. And through the prosecution process, then obviously that blood is tested. We determine what the substance is, what the level of substance is, and move forward with the prosecution. Mm-hmm.
And Teresa, I want to put this out there in terms of your business and people coming in to use marijuana. You are carding them as you would in a bar to make sure that they're of age?
Absolutely. Twice, actually.
Okay.
And then as far as the driving, for our big 420 event, we offered a free shuttle to our members throughout town. And, of mm-hmm. course, we offer cabs. You know, if we see somebody that looks like they're too intoxicated off of marijuana, my security talks to them. We have a medic on staff for our big events. So we definitely try to keep everything safe. And the safety of the community is very important to our company. As well.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to we've got some calls. Let's go to Gary, who's calling. Question about the IRS or a comment? Gary?
Gary, yeah. I heard it on the news not too long ago, and I haven't heard anybody address it, where the IRS has decided that it's still a class one felony or a drug, and that people in Colorado can declare the amount of money that they make, but that debt cannot declare any taxes taken out, any paying off any people, any rent, any electricity, no deductions whatsoever. And if you kind of do the math, you know, just like, say, $100,000 worth of product sold, and you're paying 25% to the state, and then your costs have got to be 25, 30%. And now the government's saying, well, now you're going to pay tax on $100,000, which is 25%. So it leaves the grower with maybe next to nothing and going into the hole. And it seems like that it's almost government sanctioned, because what's going to happen is these people will go out of business. They won't be able to afford it. And then what's going to come in and replace them? Big business, big companies. So it'll almost be like government sanctioned corruption through big business.
Hmm. So what you're saying is the IRS has said they're going to tax the gross, they're not going to tax the net, which obviously would be very tough on any business.
Right.
Yeah, well, we don't have any federal folks here to answer that. I guess unless someone here wants to jump into it, maybe I'll turn that question a little bit. In Colorado, I guess it's an all-cash business because the banks don't want to deal with it. Is that something we're anticipating happening here, Teresa or Ernie?
It will be an all-cash business, and I think part of what he's—
And that seems a little dangerous, but— yeah.
Very. Part of what he's referring to, the IRS has come down, is there no such thing as a business deduction.
Mm-hmm.
Where ordinary business operating your cost, I mean, there's all types of
right.
things that you take. They don't allow that with a marijuana.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in many businesses, if you have like a 10% return on your business, if you had to pay taxes on your revenue instead of on
right.
your income, you would have no income.
Correct.
Interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's kind of an invitation for people to cheat when they all cash business, right? Teresa, how do you feel about the all cash thing? I mean, doesn't that worry you that you would be running a business with huge amounts of cash running around?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've heard rumors of there being different banks that are going to be created that will help with that. So hopefully we'll look to other states and to what they're doing to combat that, and that we'll follow suit with that.
It does seem like a bit of a public safety issue. Okay, Bob, you had a question or a comment?
Yeah. As far as independent use and possession and growth go. You say it's legal to possess 1 ounce of product and have 6 plants in your home, but that seems like a discrepancy to me, because 6 plants are going to produce much more than 1 ounce of product. So how do you rectify that and still maintain a legal status? I guess I'll pause there.
Yeah, can you address that, Lieutenant Case?
Sure. So you're absolutely correct, and that's one of the pitfalls we're going to find ourselves in as we navigate ourselves forward is some of these discrepancies, and that's a legal question that's probably going to find its answer in the potential criminal prosecution. I can tell you the municipality right now is looking at it from the standpoint of when you're outside of your home walking around, it's 1 ounce. But you fast forward at 6, 7, 8 months, and you've had your 6 legal plants since February 24th, and you have packaged it all and not consumed it or gifted it away, yeah, potentially you're going to have substantially more than 1 ounce in your home.
How much would you get from 6 plants? I don't know. I'm showing my ignorance on this topic.
Well, I believe that somebody who has 6 plants that grows even moderately over the course of a year could come up with 9 pounds of marijuana.
Wow.
And some people who can grow better will produce a higher yield, but 9 pounds I think is a fair estimate pretty
That's
much.
A huge amount of marijuana.
It's a lot of marijuana. Yeah. So yeah, potentially you're going to have more marijuana in someone's home. Mm-hmm. Than the 1 ounce, and that's certainly something that the municipality at least recognizes right. within Anchorage.
And consider the last number that the legislature was bantering about was 24 plants in a home.
Wow. All right. So then you've got almost a commercial scale operation in a residential area if you've got that many. Teresa, would you agree with that?
I would agree. I have a brown thumb, though, mine would produce like an eighth of plant. I don't know. but yeah, I definitely see where that's going. There's definitely a lot of work to do there to clarify so people are able to follow the laws mm-hmm. instead of there being the gray mm-hmm. areas and the I don't knows.
Yeah. All right, Bob, a good enough answer for you?
Yeah, that was a good answer. If you don't mind, just another quick question as far as transport goes.
Sure.
And they say you're allowed to possess it and transport it a small amount under an ounce in your car. How about other means of transportation within Alaska, say air or boat? Where does that come into play?
It's against the law.
Now or in the future?
Now.
Now.
It's federal law.
Right. So you can't, it's...
No transporting
it's
by...
It's all against the law, under federal law, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, but the administration in Washington has said we're not going to enforce within states that have already legalized it. Is that true?
No.
No, okay. So they could if they wanted to.
We're talking about, particularly commercial transportation companies. Mm-hmm. It's against federal law to transport
They're it. They're not going to want to do it, right?
That's right. So if you're talking about going to rural Alaska and you're going to fly commercial, they can't transport it. They can't ship it.
No way to get it there then.
Correct.
Interesting.
It almost has to be grown in the community.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bob. That was a good question. Let's go to Linda now, who has a question about the assembly and their work. Linda?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. First, I'd like to thank the officer for talking about the process that they've already had in existence for arresting people that are impaired. It doesn't matter what they're on. And I know a lot of people were afraid, well, how are you going to test people? If you're impaired, you're impaired. It doesn't matter what you're on. So I really appreciate that. It's not having something to test it so much. And alcohol is the worst of all. But I appreciate that because, yes, anyone that's impaired, no matter what they're using or abusing, especially abusing, they should be arrested. The other thing, on the assembly, when I went to the meeting, Ernie Hall and Amy and I forget his name. I can't think right this moment. Dick Traney, that's who it is. They all three proposed that the city opt out. So, Ernie, you knew exactly what was in that, and that was one of the reasons you wanted to opt out. You knew what was going on, and, Anchorage, most of the people live in the Anchorage Bowl. I've smoked for 40 years, and I don't use it for medical reasons. I both of my home and my privacy. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to have a place to come to. Mm-hmm. But, you know, everyone doesn't abuse, and this is not about kids. Kids should never be smoking, but...
Okay. Let's give them a chance to answer that. Ernie?
Yeah, well, my response to that is the opt-out ordinance was introduced by Amy Dembowski, solely by Amy Dembowski. I proposed an amendment to it that would do a sunset on it within the first year. And the whole purpose that my amendment to the sunset was, I wanted to make sure that we didn't have people going out investing large sums of money prior to we had the laws, the regulations in place, and the land use, because like liquor license, we don't want people coming back going, wait a minute, I've invested this money, now you've got an obligation to give me a license. That's not going to work. Don't do the investment prior to having the license and the land use. But I never sponsored an ordinance, nor Mr. Trini, to my knowledge, that was introduced by Ms. Dembowski. I do believe Mr. Horneman signed on to that as a co-sponsor, but I was never a co-sponsor in any form with opting out.
Okay, thanks, Linda. I wanted to ask...
You're correct with you weren't the co-sponsor. I apologize for that. Coleman was.
Okay.
But you and Amy did vote to opt out. You were the only two that voted to still opt out at the very end.
No, I did not vote to opt out.
All right. So I think we're done with that topic. Thanks, yeah. Linda. I just wanted to ask, it raises another issue, which is with our taxicab permits, at some point in the past, it was decided, well, we're going to create a certain number of taxicab permits, and then people can buy and sell them. And so we have these permits that are worth $100,000, and they just add to the cost of taxis. They don't have any purpose. Kind of the same thing with alcohol, liquor licenses. They're sold back and forth for large amounts of money. And just through history, it's created a lot of corruption across the country and even mm-hmm. in Alaska. When you're designing this program, and when this legislature is designing the program, is there any thought being given to, like, how do we avoid setting up a system that creates these unintended consequences and these issues that could breed corruption?
Well, we've testified to the legislature on more than one occasion about a major concern in regards to selling licenses. We would much prefer them doing it on a lease. You've got a lease on this license, and when the time comes that you no longer want to be in the business, that license comes back to the state. Mm-hmm. There's no actual ownership of it. And I hope that we end up with that. If we end up doing it on a local level, I promise you we're going to work it in that manner. We also had some real questions about how they were going to determine leasing. Number one, there's qualifications that are going to be written. We felt that a fair way to do it was just a lottery. So that there was never any question about, mm-hmm. You know, big industry coming in and being able to get licensed because they had the money to do it.
Right.
And my guess is the Marijuana Control Board, they're probably going to go that way in the regulation, and they'll draft and cover all of that. And it's real important that they do that. So statewide, everybody's playing by the same right. set of rules.
Well, let me tell you, since we've got a potential industry member here, Teresa Collins from Potluck Events, how do you feel about what Assemblymember Hall just said in terms of licenses? You can't buy and sell licenses, having a lottery to hand them out, and that kind of thing.
I agree with the not buying and selling. The lottery, I think, is a mistake. I feel that in my research with how Washington played out, that it became a mistake for Washington, and it's actually they have not been as successful as Colorado. I believe that there should be an application process, that people need to show that they have the money to back it up, the business plan, the support, the staff, and the licenses be issued based on the plan, not on, you know, hey, I want one, here's, you know, oh, it's your lucky day.
Right. But I mean, don't you think they, or do you think they should be limited? Because I think some people would have a concern that we're going to have too many of them.
I'm on the fence with that. I haven't made a clear decision on that. Initially, yes, I felt that it should be limited because we do have a lot less people in Alaska than the other states that are legal. But with our tourist industry, you know, this is going to bring on a whole new tourist industry in Alaska. So that's going to be amazing. So with that, you know, there may be the need for more licenses. And I think that, you know, there should be a set number in the beginning and then kind of stretch as the industry grows. That's my personal belief, but I've heard the argument on both sides. So mm-hmm. I'm leaning towards limited, but I'm willing to listen to people's arguments about the unlimited mm-hmm. as well.
All right, Hometown Alaska, we've got about 10 minutes left. If you have questions, we might have time for them. It's 550-8433 is the number, 550-8433, or email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And here's an email from Diana. I understand the cannabis industry in Alaska is establishing a green chamber of commerce. Is that true? Teresa, do you know anything about that? Some kind of industry association?
Yeah, I do know about that. As a matter of fact, I'm also a board member of the Alaska Cannabis Growers Association. I was just recently asked to be a board member of that. I myself do not grow, again, brown thumb, but I'm part of the industry, and they wanted assistance with that. So yes, myself and several other businesses that are planning on going into the business in the future or support businesses have started talking about starting a green chamber of commerce.
So is there any concern among people in your industry that, like, sticking their head up and doing something that's potentially it's currently illegal and having the cops come in after them because they've sort of identified themselves that way?
I think the people that are standing up are the people that aren't doing mm-hmm. illegal mm-hmm. activity.
Right.
They're the ones that want to see fair regulations. They want to see the industry succeed in Alaska. And I think that most of the people that I've met along the way, that is their goal, all of our common goal. And I think it's also, you know, everybody else. I think it's all of Alaska's goal is to make this a successful industry.
Yeah. So, what concerns do you have in looking at this, Lieutenant Case, in looking at how these regulations are rolling out? Are there any areas where you kind of look at it and think, oh boy, if they do it that way, it's going to make our life more difficult? And mm-hmm. so I know everybody wants to keep kids from using marijuana. We know it's not good for their developing brains. You know, so I guess we'd want to keep it, have ways of avoiding that. Have you thought about what pitfalls are out there in the regulatory scheme for the law enforcement?
So the number one concern you already mentioned is juvenile consumption, juvenile use, developing brain. There is not a lot of research out there on what marijuana consumption does early to the developing brain at the concentration level that we're now able to produce. There is research out there at much lower levels. You can go to Europe and find some studies as well on a little bit higher levels, but we don't have the information, the data right now. When we have a 12-year-old who starts using marijuana concentrates, THC concentrates, you know, 80%, 90% pure THC. And so the concentrates are a significant concern. How do we keep that from the juvenile population? We know they access alcohol all the time. Mm-hmm. We know the long-term effects of alcohol. We have the history. Tobacco, the same thing. We have the history of the medical research. We don't have that yet with THC and marijuana. So that's a big concern.
So you need a way to really be able to enforce that. When they set up these laws, that you got to have a good way to enforce that.
Yeah, there's got to be teeth to it somewhere where we can try to ensure that mm-hmm. doesn't happen.
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in mm-hmm. on that a little bit. The committee that we've got put together is made up of three assembly members plus myself. We also have Bruce Schulte, who is ex officio, who is very up to speed on everything that's going on in regards to marijuana in the state. But we also, at every meeting, we have the legal department, we have the clerk's department, we have planning and zoning, and we have the public safety department. Mm-hmm. So anything that we're discussing in regards to the legal zoning, et cetera, we've either got Sean there or Chief Mew himself or Myron Fanning to be a part of that. So if we go in any direction that's going to cause them problems, they're there to weigh in on it and say, wait a minute, we don't know exactly how we would handle that. Mm-hmm. Another important part of us being done by the 24th is the fact that once we do it, they've got to have time to get their protocols
train everybody
in place.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. We've got some calls, and I don't think we'll get through them all, so let's take a few here. Dirk, did you have a question?
Yeah, I don't mean to bring things back on the topic a little bit, but you've been talking about how there was a legal standard before the initiative was passed. And I was curious what those were in terms of amount of
possession in your home or even a number of plants that you could have growing in your home before this initiative was passed?
So usually before we take enforcement action, we want to see the number of plants that we're believing is like a commercial grow, someone that's going to produce the marijuana to distribute or sell prior to that.
I think you have maybe a misunderstanding. So just talking about how there was a legal standard in the state of Alaska that it was legal for personal consumption even before February.
There's a Supreme Court decision.
That was the Raven. Those? It was the Raven decision by the Supreme Court that you could have 1 ounce of marijuana in your home. And as we said earlier, it sort of had to magically appear because you couldn't buy it, you couldn't grow it. But if you could get an ounce of it, you could legally have an ounce in your home.
Okay. Yeah, I was just trying to clarify.
Was it an ounce or four ounces?
It was four.
Yeah.
Was it four?
Yeah,
four.
And it was 24 plants.
Yep. Four and 24.
Yeah. So the Raven decision, it was based on the privacy clause of the Alaska Constitution,
right.
And it went back and forth over the years. It's always been unclear what it was, at very least the law will be clear. Okay. Well, thanks for that clarification, Dirk. Let's go to Thomas. Thomas, did you have a comment?
Same. I hate to bring things back up, but I don't know if I missed it, but when you were talking about the system of issuing licenses, whether it be a lottery or and how many would be issued, I was wondering, is the limit going to be just on retail, or would there also be a limit on production? And then the other question is, will somebody be able to produce and retail in the same location or possess both licenses?
Ernie, how's that looking? I know it hasn't been decided yet, but what
it hasn't been
are they
decided,
going?
But if you go back to the initiative, it is provided for in the initiative.
So, I mean, if you think about the alcohol model, yes, you do need a license to produce alcohol. You do need a license to distribute it. You need a license to sell it. And if you produce it and you have a brew pub, there's limits to how much you can sell off premise and all
Correct.
Kinds of things along those lines. So do you think a similar model is probably going to come about?
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. Okay. Does that take care of it, Thomas?
I'm not sure if I got on the whether they plan to limit how many producers there are.
We have not even broached that topic yet. That we're hoping that particular decision gets made at the state level.
Yeah, and these are all, I mean, and then their local level, there'll be probably zoning as to where the producers
Correct.
Can be located and issuing land use permits and all that. All right, thanks, Thomas. We're kind of out of time. I want to thank my guests. This has been really interesting. I feel like we could do this every week. There's so much to learn. Ernie Hall, member of the Anchorage Assembly, chairing their committee on this subject. There'll be plenty of opportunities to get your voice in there. Teresa Collins of Potluck Events. You can find their website on ours at alaskapublic.org. And thanks very much to Lieutenant Sean Cates from APD for being here. Thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Next week on Hometown Alaska, I will be back again, and we're going to be doing a show on restaurants. What's it take to run a successful restaurant in Anchorage and some of the hot new restaurants that look like they're going to be opening up soon. So a fun show, and you can call in with your own thoughts and questions about your favorite restaurants. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer of Alaska Public Media. Grace Bogine is our Production Assistant. Monica Gokey is our Web Editor and Audio Engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.